Welcome to the next episode of Dot Game. In this episode, we are going to continue our getting started with Duality project. I'm joined once again with Fidya Adam, who is the creator of the 2D engine Duality. Welcome back.
Hey.
So in the last episode, he started to walk us through creating kind of a space shooter game and use that as a mechanism to start teaching the fundamentals behind the Duality engine. In this episode, we're going to continue looking at some of those fundamentals. I think one was prefabs. Actually forgot what the other was.
Having a camera that follows you around the plate, that is one thing you often need.
Right, and then from there, we'll see how far we can get before we run out of time. So I'm actually going to go ahead and hand it over to you, Adam. So you can go ahead and get started.
Hey, let's see if I can share my screen again. Share screens. Okay, you should now see some editor window where we left off last time.
Yep.
Okay, so what we did last time was we built the basics of an Asteroids game. I'm just going to play. What we did was we imported some assets, installed all of it, and then wrote some code that we can fly around in our spaceship and get some asteroids flare by floating around. And what you see here is that I can just fly through the asteroids, which is not really what we want in the end. So what we're going to do now is we're going to equip those asteroids with the physical shape so they will interact. And since we don't want to do this three times or any number of times, because there might be a lot of asteroids later, we'll just do it once. So we'll just delete the additional asteroids. So we're just left with one over here. And what we'll do is you've already seen this, like we'll add a rigid body, define the physical shape. And well, actually, let's just do this before we continue. And next thing we will do after that is we'll create a prefab, which is sort of it's short for prefabricated object, I think. It is a serialized version of this, just this one object, not the entire scene, and we can reuse that object as many times as we want. So we'll first go to the rigid body editor after we edit the rigid body. Again, it starts out with a circle. We'll just add a polygon that matches the shape more closely. Actually, we're really lucky that this particular sprite already looks like a polygon, so that's kind of a nice match. So there you go, back to the scene editor. Actually, if you want to focus on one object in the scene editor, like you're somewhere else and wondering how to get back, you can just press F. We'll focus on the object that you've currently selected. And if you don't have any object selected, pressing F will just get you back to the origin.
Oh, nice.
So that's our asteroid. With play now, we should be able to bump into it. Yep, seems to work. And now we want multiple instances of this asteroid. So what we'll do is, there's our asteroid in the scene view. We'll just drag drop it into the project view. We'll get a new resource down there. It's a prefab. If the text is in italics, by the way, that means there are changes that are not yet saved. So we'll just press Ctrl S to save everything. And up in the scene view, you'll notice that the asteroid is now blue, and there's this link icon. And when you select it, the object inspector has this prefab link up here. When we press show, it will show us which prefab this object is linked to. We can also revert to the prefab version, like if we instantiated this and moved it around and recolored it and scaled it, we can revert later to get back. We can also apply if we make changes, like recoloring it, and we want this change to propagate to all the other instances of this prefab, we can press apply and it will. And we can also, if we want this object to disconnect completely from the prefab, we can also hit break. So this object will then continue to be just an individual object that has nothing to do with the prefab. It's also quite useful if you have a prefab that's only there for your editing, like a template for something that you don't actually want to connect to anything, but just have it there. That's where break comes in handy. So now that we've got a prefab, we can just instantiate it multiple times. Whoops. Actually, we can just drag it over here directly. Let's have some more asteroids. If we hit play now, yep, we can now bump into them and they behave like you would expect of asteroids, I guess. Stop again. And what I mentioned earlier, if we now want to make changes to an asteroid, like have this one we just created over here, and let's say we want to recolor it, can go to the sprite renderer and there's a color tint. And if we say, okay, let's make this red, if we now hit apply, all the other asteroids will also turn red. But you will also notice that the other asteroids did not move to the same position like this object, because the thing is, prefabs apply their changes to every property there is. But if you make changes to a prefab instance locally, like this instance here, when I move it around, you make changes to the position, and this gets noted in the prefab, so you can see it if there's a bold font in the object inspector. That means that this particular property will not be applied. So which asteroid did I show? This one. So since this asteroid, for example, I explicitly colored it in red. If I now color this asteroid in, let's say, green and hit apply again, this one will stay red because I previously stated that I want this one to be red. If I do revert, it will revert back to the original state and every property will be applied again. So this is basically how prefabs work.
Interesting. So it's kind of a memory of the order or the values that you changed on the individual objects?
Yeah, not the order, just which values. And actually just which values changed and what local value they have as opposed to the value they got from their prefab.
So can you cause it to change, like the position transform? Like if you moved a variable's location and then you hit apply?
Actually, I can. The thing is, it's hard to show because all the objects will be at the same spot. I can, if I hit revert, you see that none of the properties is written bold again, not even position. So if I now create another instance of this, like we have now two objects, and I just move this one. So you have this one, which has a custom position, and this one, which does not. And if I now hit apply, you've seen this object is suddenly gone. That's because it's now at the same position as this one.
So why did that not affect the other ones?
Because as soon as I move this around here, the editor recognizes that you've just changed the position property, and it automatically adds that property to the list of properties that are custom to this object.
So is it because one was an instance of the other one? I guess, so where I'm a little confused is, when you changed the coloring of one of the objects, it affected all of them. But when you're changing just the position, it seems to only affect just the other one of it. What's the difference between that?
The difference is that I've moved every single one of those objects. And in doing so, the position has been added to their local change list.
I see. So because of that, the positions are already different, whereas the color was all the same across all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I got it.
Okay. I think this is one of the things that, if I hadn't mentioned it, it wouldn't have occurred to you, because it just feels so natural to move around things.
Yeah.
And we kind of just expect that to stay the same. But that's how it works behind the curtain.
Okay. I'm with you now.
Okay, great. Actually, I hadn't planned to go that much into detail.
No, it's good. It's good detail. I think that's pretty necessary for really understanding how to work with the prefab concept.
Yeah, it's also one thing that I always try to do with duality is not forcing someone to understand everything to use it, but keeping all the things nicely arranged. So just in case someone comes along wondering how does that work, that all the parts are there and visible, and it's not a black box where magic happens or something, but you can kind of, if you wanted to, you can kind of find out how it works. It's the same with when I do a drag drop operation in the beginning with a Pixmap resource, and it just created the texture and material resource. They're not hidden away somewhere, like batched together with the Pixmap or something, but they're there in plain sight. Like if you come searching, you can kind of see how it works. It's at least, I hope you can. I guess one of the things on the list of goals. Anyway, now that we can nicely bump into things, it's the core feature of this game, it would be nice if the camera followed along, because right now we can't really play that long, because once we're off the screen, it's really hard to see where we are and how we need to rotate, and we can't really play anymore after that. So let's get back to the code. Reminder, you can click this button up here, which will open the solution file. You can just open it in the file system, but it's a shortcut. Last time we wrote the PlayerShip component, you can just write another component here. Just copy paste, it's quicker. Let's say it's a camera controller. Camera controller. The camera controller, of course, does not need a rigid body, but it's going to need a transform. And actually, we want to control the camera. So let's say it requires camera. And we don't need all of the other stuff down here, except the update method, because we do need to update every frame. And what we're going to do here is, we will specify an object that the camera controller will try to follow. And we will also specify how fast it will try to follow. Like it won't stick exactly to the object where it wants to be. It will smoothly follow around, which has a nice game feel to it usually. So let's create first a field and then a property. Let's just say all it really needs to follow is a transform. Like it will follow the player ship, but it doesn't really need to be a player ship. It could follow any transform. Let's say this is the follow target. But I'll just call it null, let's be explicit. Okay, and we need to create a property so we can edit this in the editor. By the way, of course you could use auto properties, but it's just I tend to be explicit in writing code, so I'll just write the entire thing. I guess it's just a personal thing to do that. Also, a nice thing is when you, like this is for editing in the object inspector, but when you save the scene, there's serialization. And some game engines unify serialization and editing stuff in the editor, like they serialize an object and make the data editable and serialize it back. This is different in Duality, but what I'm getting at is what is serialized is not the public property, but the private fields. So serialization doesn't really care about public or private. It just goes over all the fields and writes them. Mm-hmm. Whereas the object inspector for editing will display all the public properties or public fields, but we tend to use properties.
Okay.
And for serialization, like by default, we're using a text serialization, like XML based. And if we do use an auto property, the field will get some weird compiler generated name, and this name will show up in the text files. And when you do version control and stuff like that, it's just nicer if you have a custom specified name. So that's, I guess, one reason to not use auto properties, but you can, of course. Anyway, there's our follow target.
So as a reminder, Oops. You have to build each time.
Yeah. Not sure if I did. Yeah.
No, you did. You did. I was just reminding folks.
Okay, so now that I built, by the way, you see all these pluses over here. That's because this is a game object and we can see the components. If you are annoyed by that or just want less noise in here, you can click this. And now we are seeing only game objects, and they take the icon from their most unique component. So that's it's sort of it's the same thing. It's just a different view that's less cluttered. Okay, let's go back to this because we already know this. So let's add the camera controller to the main camera. Get it down here, and now we've got the follow target. This is the property that we just wrote, and we want it to follow the player ship. So we'll just drag the player ship in here. There it is. Can also click the eye icon if we want to see what it refers to. It refers to this transform down here. Save it again and get back to writing some code. So what we'll do is, like, the camera controller, it knows it's attached to the camera because we require a camera up here. We know that a camera has a transform. It's somewhere. Let's retrieve this here. Actually, we could use GameObject getComponent like we do for other components, but because transform is so common, there's a special case that's slightly faster than the other one. You can do this one for transform. And we also know that we have a follow target that we want to get to. So what we'll do is we'll define a target position that we want to get to with this transform. And could do this, but if our target was exactly the position of the target we are following, that would mean that the camera would collide with the player ship, and then we wouldn't be able to see the player ship anymore because the camera would be in the player ship. So to see the player ship, we need to get back a bit. And how far back? Let's just say 500. But we can actually derive this value because we want the camera to follow the player ship in a way that it doesn't zoom. It shouldn't be too near because then the player ship would scale up. It shouldn't be too far away because it would scale down due to the distance. So what we'll do is we'll ask it the camera. Camera. Hey camera, tell us what is your focus distance. The focus distance is the distance along the z-axis where objects appear at the scale they are actually in. Like, this is the distance where nothing is zoomed. It's not scaled up or down. So the position where the camera wants to go is where its target object is, but then go back as much as it needs to so it's no longer scaled. What we could do now would be to just say, well, let's just teleport there, but we don't really want that. Instead, let's see where are we currently. Let's add a variable just to be clear. And how would we need to move in order to get where we want to be? That's the diff variable. Let's actually call it position difference. And now we'll need to define a velocity based on that difference. Like, if we know, okay, our target, we want to be right from where we currently are. How would our velocity need to be to get there eventually? And for that, let's say position difference times some arbitrary factor. And we can actually calculate one. Let's just say 0.1 for now. But we can do better than just saying 0.1. We can actually make this customizable and say there's a smoothness value. Starts up at 1. Make this editable. Smoothness, and the velocity we want to move towards the target can actually be, let's do some math magic, 2 to the power of minus smoothness. This means that the higher smoothness is, the lower this factor will be. Like, if smoothness is 0, then we'll just multiply by 1. We'll be there instantly. If smoothness is 1, it will be 1/2. So we'll every frame move 1/2 of the distance we need to move to get there. And if smoothness is 2, it's 1/4, etc. Get the idea. So let's do the actual movement. Transform that move by in absolute coordinates. Move by target velocity. And because we're doing this every frame and not every time slice, we kind of need to account for different frame rates. Like by default, it will always run in 60 FPS, but in the editor, and also if you don't have a powerful machine and have a very big game, I would say, you can't really count on having constant 60 FPS or if the player disables Vsync. So to account for this, we just multiply this by time.timeMult. This is a special factor that will be exactly 1.0 if we're hitting 60 FPS. If we're hitting 30 FPS, it will be 2.0. If we're hitting 120 FPS, it will be 0.0. So it's sort of the inverse of the frame rate we are achieving versus the target frame rate we want to achieve. Oh, so we're just multiplying with this. We can normalize any movement in a way that it's suddenly frame independent. I mean, that's not 100% true, but it's reasonably true to use it that way. Okay, so I think this should work. Famous last words. Let's see. Main camera, we already added the camera controller before. We have a smoothness of 1, and we already set the follow target to be the player ship. So I'm going to play. It follows, but it's not really smooth. Let's increase the smoothness value. Like, let's say 5. That's much better. Yeah, let's keep it at 5. The thing is, when you test things in a sandbox, when you hit stop, it will reset to the value it had before. That's sort of a known issue. I mean, it's not a bug or anything, it's by design, but eventually it would be nice if there was a way around that. For now, we'll just have to remember that we added 5, that we set 5 and add it again. Okay, I think I've got the camera controller covered. So the next thing that we do would be to make the player ship shoot some laser objects. I'm not entirely sure if we can manage to do the entire block in the remaining time, but we can start.
Okay.
Actually, can I shorten this somehow to get to the main part? Let's just start by importing the laser. Reminder, we imported sprites by just drag-dropping them into the product view. By the way, this down here is a complete mess. Like, it's just for tutorial purposes. If you are doing any kind of serious project, you should probably create some folders.
Yes, I could see that getting a little bit chaotic.
Yeah. By the way, what happens is the resources in Duality are referenced using their path value, like a relative path to the data directory. That means that if you move something around or rename it, normally the references to that resources would break. But thankfully, the editor is smart enough to figure out what you're doing. So as long as you move and rename stuff in the editor, it will automatically adjust all the references to it. If you do it outside the editor, then the references will likely break and you'll have to move it back and then move it in the editor again.
Okay. That's good to know.
References breaking is not as bad as it sounds. It's just a temporary thing. As soon as you put the file back, it will be okay again. So it's not a completely breaking change.
Okay.
Okay, let's create a laser object here. Let's hide the player ship for now so we can see the laser. Okay, there it is. The laser is going to need a rigid body. It's not really going to be physically simulated, but it needs to collide. And to do this, we need to integrate it with the physics we use. And for this laser, we can actually use the circle shape. And because we don't want the laser to really collide. We just want to be notified when it collides without it like bouncing off things. We can just hit this flag. It's this makes this shape a sensor shape, and sensor shapes report collisions but do not resolve them.
How did you turn it into that? Yeah.
So to indicate that this is now a sensor.
How did you turn it into a sensor shape?
Oh, you just select the shape. It will turn up in the object inspector, and you click this is sensor.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I missed that part.
Yeah. All right. So we've got the laser now. Let's see. What we can do is we can create a prefab for this laser and then delete the object because we won't need that anymore. And okay, normally I would have done this slightly differently. Let's just do it fast so we get to the main part. If we want to spawn lasers, we kind of need to, we need the player ship that will spawn the lasers because it will check if the player pressed the button to fire some lasers. We need the player ship to know about this prefab down here. And the way we do this is like everything else, we'll just add a field and a public property to edit it. The important part is that whenever we reference resource, we do this by using a content ref struct. In this case, a content ref of type prefab. I have to add a using directory up here to add it to the resources. And this will be the laser prefab. Initialize with it with null. By the way, this is a struct, but there is an implicit cast from its resource type to the content ref type, so we can actually assign null. What this content ref does, briefly mentioned that resources are references using their path, and content ref is an organized way to do this. Like I wouldn't put a string in there or just the resource itself. But the content ref, and by doing this, the editor will know, and also the runtime will know that this is, that it is a reference to a resource, and it will enable the editor to do stuff like, okay, I just updated this resource and replaced it with something else, and then the editor would make all the objects to reload that resource. So it's sort of it's a hook for the engine to tie into when something happens to the resource. It's also making it easier to, if you have a level, for example, and you want to reset that level or reload it, you would usually have a content ref to a scene, and if you want to reload that, you can just dispose that scene, and the content ref will now say, okay, I had a reference to this scene, but the scene is now disposed, but I still have the path. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to load whatever resource is at that path. And by that, you can dispose a scene, for example, and all the content refs in all the plugins and all the code will now know, okay, I'll have to get the new reference to that scene because the old one is gone now. And this is one of the things that the content ref stuff does.
Okay.
Okay, we'll just put this here. So now we have a laser prefab down here. And let's build this again. And we can drag drop it here. And now it's behaves the same as if it is a reference to any other object. Just references is down here. And tells us which path it is located at. But I think we're running out of time here a bit. So one last thing I'm going to show is, if we wanted to create a new object of that laser prefab, like this is the interesting part. I'll just do this, laser prefab. This is the content ref, and I'm going to ask it, okay, give me the resource that you are referring to. This might prompt the resource to load in the first place. Like if this is the first time I'm using the resource, it will load now. If it's not, it's just accessing a field. And then I would say, okay, because it's a prefab, going to call instantiate, and instantiate will give me proper game object. And then I would say, okay, I could now configure this. And important last part is we need duality has explicit scene management. So I can instantiate this object, but as long as I don't say, okay, I want it to be part of the current scene, of the current level, it will just be garbage collected and be gone again. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to say, hey, game object, what is the scene you're currently in? And please scene that object. So this is how I would add it to the scene, and then it would be part of the game simulation, and I guess you can figure out the rest.
Interesting. So I actually we have a little bit more time if you do want to show the rest of it. It doesn't look like it'd be too much.
Well, in that case, it's still not exactly the way I thought I'd do it, but let's just say, okay, keyboard input. And for the laser, we don't want to check if we hold down the key. We just want to check if the key was hit, like once. And I have to hit and release it, so it will trigger again. So let's say spacebar. And when I press this, actually, let's call this laser object. And laser object, it has a transform component. It should start at this game object transforms position. So it will start in the center of the player ship. It will also, it should share the same angle. Like it should look into the direction that the player ship is looking. And then we are going to need to apply a velocity. It's called laser body, although it's not really a physical one that collides. Laser object, get component rigid body. And we'll just set a linear velocity. And this is, let's say, we just create a vector from the angle of the player ship with a length of how fast we want it to be, like, say 10. And I think that should be it. Like it won't do anything interesting, but it should spawn and fly. Okay, it's assigned. It's a play, go into the game view. Ah, it worked. Nice.
Awesome. So how easy is it to detect a collision between two objects?
You've seen something similar before. We'll just implement an ICMP collision listener, which will notify duality that, hey, actually this component is interested in being notified about collision events. And then we check, okay, what object did they collide with? And yeah, we can do, I think you can see the rest from there.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's pretty awesome. Pretty easy. So is there anything else before we go ahead and wrap up?
No, I think so.
Okay. So I think there's actually some samples online. We talked a little bit about that. Do you happen to have a good sample that we can kind of show folks some of the neat stuff that you can do?
Yes. I have a sample prepared. This sample, by the way you get samples is like in the editor, you click File and Manage Packages. And you will see a list of installed packages. This is what Duality installs when you run it, the installation at the beginning. And you can switch to the online repository, which will show you all the packages that there are. Let's see if my internet connection will work at this. Okay, seems to hang a bit right now, but theoretically we'd just enter sample to filter the search a bit, and then we'd see the sample, and there we go, sample, just select it. This one is already installed in this, and we just hit install, it will restart, and we'd end up with this. It's a folder called Dual Stick Space Shooter in this case. If we just hit play, this is actually a full small game with audio and everything. You can fly around, shoot stuff. It also has a smooth camera controller. There is some sort of a very, very, very easy physics puzzle. Like you have to get this ball up here into this sensor area, and then the door will open. And there's a simple enemy type, and a distinctive programmer art style, if you want to call it like that. And yeah, you can, the source code is included in all the samples or in most of the samples, and you can just open up some of the objects, and while the game is running, just like, didn't hit stop or anything, just take a look at the game world and move stuff around, and yeah, see what the engine can do.
Wow, that's quite a map. So the controller that's on the screen makes me question, can you do controller input as well?
Yes, the sample is built in a way that is actually a multiplayer game. Like one player can use the keyboard, and if the game detects that there's input from a gamepad, it will just pop in a second player, and then you can do a co-op or something.
Interesting, okay. So if, in theory, somebody wanted to build out a sample and contribute it, can they upload it to the online repository?
Yeah, that's the interesting part. This package management is actually NuGet in a wrapper. So if you want to get your own plugin or sample or whatever, this also works for plugins, out there you can just wrap up a NuGet package and release it, and Duality will be able to detect it, and everyone will be able to install it. So there's that.
It's pretty straightforward. Okay. All right, so for people who are interested in continuing on, what are some good resources that they can go and I guess, look into?
So basically, you've got all the important links on the project page, duality.adamslayer.net. When you click on source code, you're going to see the GitHub repository where you can, like, you can file issues, file pull requests, join the discussion. I actually try to do most of the development in the open, like write regular progress reports and issues, and you can join in and just say, hey, I think maybe you could do this one like that. There's also, when you click over here, a wiki. It's also on GitHub, which has some articles like, okay, I want to do a custom sprite type, and there's an article on how to do this. You can also contribute articles to the wiki if you want. There's also a contribution guide down here, I think, or somewhere. How to contribute. And also, we do have a forum. It's just one of those old school PHP BB boards. And we also have a chat. So if you just want to join us and say hello, then do it.
Awesome. So what's the best way for somebody to, I guess, to get notified of updates? Is it just follow the GitHub repository? Is there any sort of social media thing that they can follow?
There's a Twitter hashtag, but that's not very active. You can, like, it's up here if you want to see it. But I guess if you just want to be notified of updates, the easiest way is to follow the GitHub repo. It's pretty much all in there.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that you want to share with folks before we wrap up?
Nothing specific, actually. No.
All right. I want to thank you for joining the show. This was really awesome. I've been wanting to get started on this for a while, but I hadn't had too much time to look into it. So I really appreciate you coming on the show and walking us through really
Thanks.
A lot of the fundamentals, too, on how to get started. I feel pretty armed with the knowledge of going and kind of making a pretty, you know, even I was going to say basic, but honestly, I could probably start to make a fairly robust game with what you just showed me. So thanks again for joining, and thank you guys for watching. As Adam said, there's a lot of great resources that you can go to if you either A, want to contribute and join in on the project, or B, you just want to use the engine to start making your own games, or of course C, if you want to create some samples to help teach other people on how they can start making games. Going and uploading it into the online repository of samples is a good way to do that. So thanks everyone for joining, and I'll see you next time.
See ya.